With Ross Reynolds, I'm Steve Scherr. You're tuned to The Record. Billy Frank Jr. is one of the Northwest's preeminent leaders. The 83-year-old Nisqually tribal member helped lead the battle for Indian treaty rights in the 60s and 70s. A fisherman his whole life, Frank joined the Marines in the 1950s, worked as a power company lineman, a member of Local 77 in Seattle.
That was part of our whole life of working and going to jail. And, you know, you could do that. You belonged to the Union. In 1968, we had a protest down in Olympia, and we all went to jail. And I'm working on the power line in Shelton, Washington. Tuesday or Wednesday, I got out of jail. The general foreman had my pictures hanging up. He was just so proud of me. You know, God dang you, you went to jail for your right. And, you know, that's how the Union treated us, you know. They supported what we were doing.
Billy Frank Jr. was first arrested in 1945 when he was 14 years old. 50 more arrests would follow. He was one of the many Native Americans who went to jail fighting for their treaty rights. Tribes reserved the right to fish, hunt, and gather shellfish in all the traditional places in treaties with the U.S. government negotiated in the 1850s. When tribal members tried to exercise those rights, state game agents confiscated their fish and equipment and arrested the fishermen. So they had protests, not sit-ins, but fish-ins. They were a national story in the 60s. Marlon Brando came to join the protests. They drew crowds of cheering supporters and jeering opponents to Frank's landing on the Nisqually River. The fight on the river and in the courts culminated in the 1974 decision by federal judge George Bolt, acknowledging the Indians' right to fish. Large black and white photographs from that tumultuous era line the corridor at the offices of the Northwest Tribal Fisheries Commission building in Olympia. Each elicits a tale.
We couldn't get the U.S. attorney to take our case. You know, we've asked him dozens and dozens of times. They wouldn't take our case. And they come down to just witness this today, and pretty soon they seen the state come down and gas us all.
What bridge is this in the picture?
That's right across I-5. It's, you know, as you go across Puyallup, the bridge is down on the left there.
Yeah, that bridge is still there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's still there.
You drive by this bridge and remember those
That's
events.
<right.
laughs> That's something.
And this is the camp right here.
This is 1968
or so, something like that. No, it was 1970, I think. Yeah, this is our camp, and they wiped that camp out.
Same day? Is that the same day as the gassing?
Yep. They come down, and they had a cat, and they just took everything. The thing was, that's on reservation.
This is on the Puyallup Reservation?
Yeah, Puyallup Reservation. And that U.S. attorney's watching all this. Yeah, they come down and wiped everybody out.
Who was so adamant to get you guys out of here? Who was that?
Well, you know, we were fighting the state of Washington.
Yeah.
You know, and we were fighting the game department and Slade Gorton and all them. You know, this is Herman Johns. He's gone now. He's my nephew. And so they took these two to jail. They let Marlon go. Yeah. So, and this is my niece, Allison Bridges. And she's in that camp. That's the same time.
Yeah, I see these are the guys arresting her, right?
Yep, them are the
these city cops or state cops?
Well, they were city and county and state patrol. This is the nets and fish that they've taken, you know.
Oh, so this is, he's a state officer, and this is confiscated, these are confiscated fish.
Yeah.
He's a game warden.
Yeah. Yep, and that's my wife right there, Norma, and a game warden, arresting them, taking them to jail. This is Al Bridges, my brother-in-law, Don Matheson, and Janet McLeod. And they're all fighters going. They were just on a canoe that day down at Nisqually. My sister Rachel, Al Bridges, my brother-in-law. She's still alive. Al's gone.
Who were your parents?
My parents is Willie Frank, and my dad, and he died as 104, and my mom was 96, Angeline Tobin Frank. And so she died at 96. And so they had a long life, I mean, you know,
yeah,
together. And they lived right there at the landing.
What did they do?
Well, Dad fished all his life, and Mom just took care of all of us, you know.
So when your dad was fishing, did he get hassled?
No. Well, he did way back in the early days. They had went to jail, and but, you know, not like the what we went through.
Why? What, when was this? So what was he going to jail, like the 50s?
Well, they were trying to move him up to the reservation, same as what they were trying to do to us. And they let him fish down to the trestle, the railroad trestle, you know. And so they, but they kept on going below that, you know, and they'd throw him in jail, or, you know, the boundary is what they wouldn't stick to the boundary.
Because they didn't recognize it as a boundary?
No.
Why not?
Well, it, you know, the Treaty of Medicine Creek said they can fish anywhere, you know, out here.
And why was the boundary? Was it different fishing or better fishing?
No, it was state of Washington boundary. You know, they had boundaries all over here. And out here at Carr Inlet and up the Nisqually River. We got a reservation boundary way up on up the river, but they didn't pay any attention to that. They just made their own boundary.
So your father, he would get arrested. How long would he have to stay in jail?
Well, they had a lawyer, and, you know, in them days, and I don't know how long. I don't think they had to spend any time in jail like we did, you know.
What's your earliest memories of fishing on the river?
Well, you know, we just grew up with the canoes and you know, just grew up fishing, and, you know, Dad would take us down. We'd go down flounder fishing. You know, we'd go down the mouth of the river and catch flounders, you know. And then you walk, you know, and pretty soon a flounder's under your foot. And you pick it up, and if it's big enough, you keep it, or if it's little, you just throw it back. And, you know, so we walked the creek, and we'd get flounders, and we'd cook them right there.
So that's early memory.
There's no more flounders now.
I was just going to ask you, people aren't walking and getting flounders anymore, are they?
No, the flounders are all gone. This whole South Sound is poison now. I mean, pollution, you know. And so, you know, there's our salmon that migrate out of the Nisqually River. They can't get to the Narrows Bridge, which is only 10 miles up out in the Sound, and they die. That's Squaxin Island, salmon coming from Squaxin Island, and that's our salmon coming from the Nisqually migrate now.
They're dying because of the toxic aspect of the water.
Yeah.
All the factories, all the heavy metals, all the stuff that was dumped in there.
Yep.
But you remember when you could walk out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and just pristine water and everything, you know. Even though we had a dam, we had three dams on the river. You know, it was still, it wasn't a people problem then. Today it's a people problem.
How did you feel as a kid when you started to realize that the state wasn't letting your father fish?
Yeah, well, you know, I was 14 years old when they arrested me. While I was in a boat, I went to pick my net up. Well, I had to walk up and where it was tied, and here they come. And so I took off running up the river, and they caught me up there. And they took me, that was on Pierce County, the other side of the river. So they took me clean to Spanaway, which is a little kangaroo court up there. And then they tried me up there, and they took me to jail.
What was the crime?
Fishing. You know, so here, I called Mom and Dad and said, I'm in jail, you know.
Do you remember that first jail?
Yeah, they threw us in with everybody. I mean, Jesus, there was robbers in there and everybody, you know.
And you're a kid.
And, yeah. And so, and I was only 14. And then Mom and Dad come and got me and brought me home. And I mean, you know, they don't just come and get you. You don't have a car. You don't have anything to, you know. So we got friends, you know, that made sure that I got out of jail and got home, you know.
Did you know you were doing something that would get you in trouble?
No. Fishing, if they were going to arrest me for fishing, then, you know, I just kept on fishing. I never did stop.
Billy Frank Jr., longtime chair of the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission. We'll talk about salmon, the environment, and his legacy next hour on The Record. With Ross Reynolds, I'm Steve Scher. It's The Record. Billy Frank Jr. is 83 years old now. He's been chair of the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission for much of the past 30 years. It serves 20 tribes in western Washington. Its staff includes biologists, geneticists, and fisheries managers. The 1974 Bolt decision reestablished tribal rights to harvest fish and shellfish in all the places they had done so before the Europeans came. The commission grew out of the need to manage that resource, their livelihood. When we spoke in Olympia at the headquarters of the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, Billy Frank told us about a recent public celebration on the 40th anniversary of the Bolt decision. The stage was full of the older citizens who had fought the state for their rights. Billy Frank Jr. was on stage too, speaking to his peers, but aiming his message to the next generation.
They filled the whole stage up, you know, and I talked to them, and they all listened to, you know, this guy is still alive and he's been in jail so many times.
Yeah. But with pride. You say it with pride.
Yeah. It isn't over, you know. The people that work here, you know, they're dedicated people to take us on this journey, a science journey, you know, to tell the truth, trying to get it out to the locals, you know.
Why is it that we spend a lot of money, there's institutions in the state commission trying to improve the population of fish? Why are we still on this downward slide?
Well, there's nobody, not even the governor, nobody even talks about natural resources, and that's salmon. You know, nobody mentions salmon. Nobody mentions fish. You know, it allows Boeing to poison our water. Pollution every day. They're throwing poison into our water every day.
And they're going to get 30 plus years to clean it up, if at all.
Yeah. And if they ever stop doing it, and then we start moving this direction, you know.
You know, whenever you talk to people, they say, oh, it's about development. It's about more people coming in. But you're saying it's that. I'm sure you're saying that's true, too, habitat destruction. But pollution.
Oh, yeah. Pollution's big time.
Industrial
cars. And the runoff
cars,
from the highway. Yeah. You know, and everything, it's coming back into the water, you know, comes down from the sky. And
you know, we're going to get another million-plus people here in the next.
Yeah, that's what they tell us. And, you know, we just keep on going. We don't change our course. You know, it's all natural resource. We've still got the recovery of our salmon. You know, NOAA's wrote off on that, and our Chinook salmon. And we got 400 sea lions in the mouth of the Nisqually River. You know, that's a problem, you know. And we just, I mean, you're fighting these battles, and then you look at the sea lions, and nobody's even managing them, you know.
Hatchery versus wild. I mean, there's this whole debate about hatchery versus wild.
Yeah.
What would you, if you were waving your magic wand, Billy Frank Jr., what would you do going forward? How would you manage those two aspects?
Well, we went up to Voigt's Creek Hatchery, and they were breaking ground for this new, it's a new hatchery, but it's the old Voigt's Creek Hatchery. One of the things that I see is that's a very important part of what we're doing, that hatchery. You know, that hatchery's been gone, it got washed out, and now it's coming back. That's a plus for all of us. And it'll be managed right. It'll be managed for wild and artificial, like it should be. The state of Washington has mismanaged our wild stock. They mismanaged our hatcheries. You know, they moved salmon from up there down here, and, you know, they did all things wrong. Now we're trying to get it all back in order. And it's taken all these years to do that, all these protests and everything, to get it to where it's managed right.
You know, you mentioned the sea lions at the Nisqually Delta there. So driving over again, you look at that delta, that last wild delta, and the dikes have been busted, and there's a new living river.
Yep.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's our river, Nisqually. And that's beauty. I mean, that's a beautiful river. And, you know, it just we just keep managing it. And even though the salmon are migrating out, they don't get 10 miles down and they die, you know, we'll continue to manage it. We'll continue to clean up South Sound, Hood Canal, wherever the poison is, wherever the dead zones are.
You know, people, you talk about salmon as food, it's sustenance. Right. But is there, this is a commitment of a lifetime. Is there a spiritual element for you? Is there something that ties you back to your parents, your grandparents? Is that part of what motivates you?
Oh, yeah. You know, we have ceremonies, and, you know, that's all. I mean, every time we have a new child born, we have a salmon bake. You know, these are things that's been part of our life, all of our lives, you know. And it's still there. And, you know, salmon is in our blood, you know. And that's how it is. It just, it's there, and we want to keep it there. When I was a young kid and drifting on the Nisqually River, I always wondered, who's going to take care of us? I look over here at the sportsmen and the game department. They take care of them. But I look at us Indians and nobody takes care of us, you know, no infrastructure or anything. Well, today we have an infrastructure now, you know, with Northwest Indian Fish Commission and all of our tribes. And we have the best science there is, you know. And we're 100 years too late, but then that's what we were dealt. And so we're going to use that to the fullest, you know, and try to bring this salmon back, bring it back. And you know, we got Timber Fish and Wildlife Initiatives, you know, and we have, you know, we have coalitions that want to do the best for recovery of salmon. And so, you know, we just got to build bigger coalitions, you know.
What was the story of your last arrest?
We were all up at the railroad bridge. And my wife, Norma, and Maisel, my sister, was across the river bringing their boat across, and the game wardens were towing them. So we're standing up there on the bank, you know. Now, we're not fighting or anything, but then they arrested us. But they didn't take us to jail, you know. Now, they took Norma and my sister to jail because they were fishing, but they didn't take me to jail. They arrested three or four of us up here in a bank. And so, you know, here we were standing around ready to go to jail, and nobody took us. So that was one of the stories of what happened. You know, that was in 73. You know, and but you know, I fished from that railroad bridge, leaned down to the mouth of the river, and they watched us across the river at Army Land. They'd parked their car over there 24 hours a day, the game department, and they'd watch us straight across the river where we lived all the time. And you know, they knew when I left on the canoe. They knew when we come back. They knew where we sit. They knew everything. You know?
You know, I thought I'd seen some pictures where there are people lined, white people lining the river, shouting, yelling, Did you ever feel endangered?
Well, you know, they'd shoot at us. They'd do everything.
They'd shoot at you?
Oh, yeah, and with shotguns. And
did you ever get hit?
Well, they landed. Well, I come up the river one time with two of Magnuson's people.
Warren Magnuson's senator.
Senator Warren Magnuson's two people. And they were shooting at us that day. And my nephew, Herman, he was driving the boat, and I was standing on side, and the two Magnuson people were all standing up. And that's when we heard these pellets hitting us, you know, shooting from the Pierce County side over. There's an old gun club down there. And that's where they're shooting from. Gun club's gone now.
Yeah. Well, obviously you didn't get hurt by them.
No. We just kept right on going.
You speak of it with such, you know.
Just another day.
Another day. Yeah.
Another day on the river. Yeah, you know, I mean, we always came back. And nobody thought we'd never come back because we always came back, you know. And a lot of our people drowned, and, you know, they never come back, you know. And, you know, these things happen in life, you know, and it's close to all of us, you know. And it's very sad, but, you know, we always come home. And here we are today.
Do you still find yourself floating on the Nisqually sometimes? Do you have time?
Yeah, I got two boys that are fishermen, Willie, my son, and Chug, my other boy, my oldest boy.
So you're out there?
Oh, yeah, where I'm out there hauling fish to the fish buyer or wherever, you know, getting smoking fish and stuff, you know. Yeah.
That's got to be pleasant.
Oh, God, that's great. That's a good time for me.
Billy Frank Jr. has been honored with the Common Cause Award for human rights efforts, the Albert Schweitzer Prize for Humanitarianism, the American Indian Distinguished Service Award, the 2006 Wallace Stegner Award. He was also awarded the Washington State Environmental Excellence Award from the same state that put him in jail 50-odd times for fighting to protect salmon and shellfish that once flourished in Puget Sound. Arwin Nixt helped produce our profile of Billy Frank Jr. For the Record, on KUOW, I'm Steve Scherr.